506-3355. Be one of the first 50 listeners to call today and get $400 off your all-laser LASIK procedure. That's a savings of $200 per eye. TLC Laser Eye Centers has over 20 years' experience and performed over 2 million procedures. Let our team help you. For your free consultation, call now. 800-506-3355. 800-506-3355. 800-506-3355. Results may vary.
President Trump will uphold the long-standing tradition tomorrow of pardoning the Thanksgiving turkey. It's the 70th anniversary of the event, which will be held once again in the Rose Garden. The lucky birds were raised in western Minnesota. After the White House ceremony, the turkeys will live out their natural lives at Gobbler's Rest, an exhibit at Virginia Tech. Later that day, Trump will head to his resort, Mar-a-Lago, in Florida for a long Thanksgiving weekend. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is speaking out regarding a photo of him that went viral. USA Radio's Washington correspondent Doug Christian has the details.
Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin posed with his wife, Louise Linton, in front of a sheet of dollar bills, the first that have his signature on them. Linton struck a pouty model pose while holding the cash with one black leather gloved hand. Linton's cartoonishly villainous pose spurred a lot of chatter. Mnuchin responded on Fox News Sunday.
I never thought I'd be quoted as looking like villains from the James Bond. I guess I should take that as a compliment that I look like a villain.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
The best part about Dell's Black Friday sale is not that they have the lowest prices of the year. It's not just that they have the hottest electronics and tech, like the latest laptops with Intel Core processors and the latest gaming PCs. Or that there's free shipping and extended returns on everything. Or that it lasts until November 26th. No. The best part is you can shop these amazing doorbusters while wearing your Jam Jams. All you gotta do is go to Dell.com/Black Friday or call 800-BUY-DELL. Because why would you put on clothes if you can shop in your comfy pants?
Regulators in Nebraska approved the Keystone XL pipeline, removing the last big hurdle for the oil project after years of bitter protests from environmentalists and landowners, and giving President Trump a victory in his campaign for U.S. energy dominance. The Nebraska Public Service Commission voted by a 3-2 margin to approve the route through the state for the pipeline, which will transport 830,000 barrels of oil per day from Canada to the Gulf Coast. Former President Obama had blocked the permit for the pipeline in 2015, citing oil sands' impact on climate change, but Trump quickly reversed that decision after taking office. One of the key provisions in the Senate's tax cut bill is removing the individual mandate. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, joined CBS's Face the Nation to discuss the Obamacare mandate.
Remember what the hated Obamacare mandate is. It fines an American family if they can't afford their insurance, insurance that Obamacare made unaffordable in the first place. So this bill doesn't cut a single dime from Medicaid. It doesn't cut a single dime from the insurance subsidies. It doesn't change a single regulation in Obamacare. It simply says the IRS cannot fine you if you cannot afford health insurance.
Senator Cotton also discusses who the individual mandate actually affects.
That working families and poor Americans, because 4 out of 5 Americans who pay this fine make less than $50,000, will no longer be fined for not being able to afford their insurance.
President Trump is pushing for the NFL to suspend Oakland Raiders running back Marshawn Lynch if he continues to sit for the national anthem. You're listening to USA Radio News. My name is Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for Modern Design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Good afternoon. Weather this afternoon is mostly sunny with a high near 47. West wind around 14 miles per hour with gusts as high as 26 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around 29. Southwest wind 6 to 8 miles per hour. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 56. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tuesday night, a chance of rain mainly after 4 a.m. Partly cloudy with a low around 40. Southwest wind 3 to 8 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Wednesday, a chance of rain, mainly before 7 a.m. Mostly sunny with a high near 50. Light west wind becoming northwest 5 to 10 miles per hour in the morning. Chance of precipitation is 30%. New precipitation amounts, can't try to say precipitation, amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. This is the award-winning show, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in a state, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff, work out of our houses. I've been told that the only traffic jam is from the living room to the dining room. But, yeah. But we try to help people who either have a mental health issue or someone in their family has it. And we do this in various ways. We do it through teaching classes. We teach a 12-week course that's called Family to Family, which is for family members or people who know someone or work with someone or neighbor to someone who has a mental illness, and they're good friends with them. And we try it. It helps because it goes over all the medication and what the side effects, also what to do, what not to do, what not to say in certain circumstances. And we also run a support group, which is the third Thursday of every month, and it's at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. You don't have to be a member of NAMI. You don't have to register for the support group. You do have to register for the classes. We also have what they call a basics class, which is about a six-week course for families who have children with a mental health issue under the age of 18. Those two classes you have to register for, but there is no charge. There's no charge for any of the pamphlets or folders or anything like that. If you have any questions or want some more information, you can reach out to us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have someone check it at least twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you. We are very privileged today to have with us a special guest who my co-partner there, Tracy Ivey, is going to introduce.
Yes, thank you, Larry. Today we have Christine Maglione as our guest. She is, did I pronounce that correctly?
Maglione.
Maglione.
It's okay.
She is the coordinator of the IFSS, which is the Intensive Family Support Services at Hunterdon Medical Center in Flemington, New Jersey. She has a master's degree in psychology and was a crisis counselor in emergency services before working with IFSS. She has also been a career counselor at the Career and Life Planning Center and worked for PEACH, which is a parent education program. Lastly, her background includes working at AT&T for 13 years. Chris, what does the IFSS do for people, and how long have you been the coordinator?
So I've been coordinator for 17 years, going on 18 actually, and a long time.
It's been that long.
It's been that long.
It's gone so fast. It don't seem like it's been that long.
I know. And so what we do is we work with families who have family members that have a mental illness. We do not work with the identified patient, which would be the ill family member, just their families or their loved ones, friends, anybody that's involved in the patient.
You know, Chris, I can't believe it's been that long that we've known each other.
Is it scary?
It is scary. Very scary. <Yeah. laughs> Because I remember the day you came there.
Do you?
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize you were in emergency services, but when you came to IFSS, yeah. And I'm saying, wow, you know, 17 years?
Yes. Well, almost 18. It might be 18, actually. I think. But
don't add to it, all right? Don't add to it, all right? We'll go with 17.
Okay.
You know, I'll go with 10, but you go with 17 if you want. Yeah. But, you know, it's been a wonderful relationship, I think, because
yeah.
we volunteer. Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, we do in NAMI, but you don't. Mm-hmm. We send people back and forth to each other.
Yes.
And that's the great thing.
Yeah.
Because we're confident in each other that, you know, maybe we can help the person, and I send them to you, you send them to me, and, you know, it works out very well most of the time. You know?
It does, and it really balances it out. I feel very good when I am with a family that I have another support resource that I could refer them to so that they don't only have our program, but they have NAMI's program. A lot of people want to know what the difference is, and the difference really is that intensive family support, we deal with the families more on a professional level, where with NAMI, I always tell people they've been there, they've done that, and they're still doing it, so they could definitely identify with
right.
things that you're going through.
Right. And it makes it a lot easier for them to talk to someone
yes.
who either has gone through what they're going through mm-hmm. or is going through what they're going through.
Right.
You know, like, you know, it's great that, you know, and that you're doing it from a professional mm-hmm. standpoint, which they need also.
Right.
And, you know, we're doing it from, I want to say not professional, but as a family to family type thing.
Like a real life experience.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yes. Like we understand what they're going through, mm-hmm. you know, because we've been there. You know?
Right.
And you're doing it from a professional point of view, which is great because they need that also.
Yes.
You know, let's not have any doubt about that. Mm-hmm. They do need that as well, you know. Okay. So.
So Chris, why don't you tell us how the program works, the one-on-one, and you also have a group.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so we get referrals from NAMI, for instance. It's a great referral. We get referrals from our emergency services. We also, part of our IFSS, we have a program called CARE. And Larry knows about CARE because Larry worked in our CARE program. So what we do is we have somebody from our staff located down by the emergency room so that when families do come in a crisis, that person, one of our family specialists, can sit with the family, kind of educate the family on all of the possible outcomes while a crisis counselor is working with the ill person. So they're kind of like a liaison between the ill person, between the crisis worker and the family so that they would better understand what's going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah, because when I worked with CARE, they had the counselor who would talk to the person.
Right.
And I would talk to the families
right.
who and explain to them what was available to them and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked out very well, actually.
Right.
You know, because, you know, the counselor could talk to the person, whatever they were there for,
mm-hmm.
Whether it could be a number of things, you know, attempted suicide, ODing, whatever, you know.
Yes.
But I would talk to the families and get them to understand what, you know, what is available to them.
Yes.
And, you know, and 99% of it is free of charge. So, you know, that helped too.
And then at that point, the family would be referred to us.
Right.
And then we do provide, I call them. We give them the option of coming to see us one-on-one. Coming to see us one-on-one or coming to our support group, which we do hold the first Wednesday of every month at Frank's Restaurant in Clinton, New Jersey.
I got to ask you. I don't mean to interrupt, but I got to ask you. When you were – how long were you in emergency services?
Almost 2 years.
Okay. And that's included in the 17 that you told me about?
No, that was before.
Oh, geez. I keep trying to condense it.
She's a veteran here.
Yeah.
You know what? No, Larry, it could have been included. You know, they give you these certificates every year, like thank you for 17
yeah.
years of service.
Yeah, no.
I'm thinking it was when I was also, probably when I started with emergency services. I worked per diem there.
Okay. Because I worked in emergency services for a while, too, on a Saturday, after you were in IFSS.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I worked there on Saturdays from 8 to like 2. And
as part of the CARE program.
As part of the CARE
right.
program, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, the people that you work for, not for, but, the, you know,
with,
there you go. That's it. Thank you. They range in all sorts of different categories.
Yes.
Could you elaborate a little bit on the categories that you've seen?
I think that the thing that really opened my eyes when I started this program was because this is Hunterdon County, I was just really amazed at the different professions that would be coming in, the different education levels. I've worked with so many different families. I've worked with families with athletes, families that have doctors and lawyers and probably every profession you can imagine. So you realize that there is no discrimination with NAMI, or not with NAMI, but with the mentally ill population. It can hit anybody at any time. And when they say 1 in 3, I actually do believe that. And you really don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
Right.
You have these big, beautiful homes, and you know, you don't know what the families are going through behind those doors. So it can be, any education level, any age level. We only deal with families that have family members that are 17 and a half or older. Okay, so that's when they're aging out of high school, we can start working with the families.
You know, it's when you say it's a small world.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one time Al Bassetti and I went to a house, and we got out of the car, and the family, the husband and wife, were standing there, and a woman says to me, "Is your wife Priscilla?" And I says, "Yeah." She says, "Oh, well, we just took the family-to-family class with her, you know, and we were going to their house for a situation." But it's just like, you know, so small world,
oh,
you know?
Everybody knows everybody,
you know, or whatever, you know, and it was just like, wow, really?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's very true.
So.
Let's talk a little bit about the counseling services. How often can people see a counselor?
So it's very open-ended, our program. So we have some people that might just come in for maybe once and they get all the information they need and that's all they need and we'll never see them again. But I do have families that I've been seeing for the 17 years that I've been in this program. And it really becomes more of a just, you know, you go through the journey with the family. You actually develop friendships. It's a little bit different. It's not, we're supportive counseling. Mm-hmm. So we're not bound to those ethics that you learn in school about waiting 2 years before you start becoming friends with somebody. When you have that, you know, that type of counseling. So you do develop friendships with these people, not really out of work, but so there's times when I see them that we'll just talk about what's going on with their family. You kind of almost watch their family member go through all different stages, and many times it gets to the level, and I've been dealing with, like I said, some of these people for 17 years, that the family kind of just gets to an acceptance level. Mm. So initially you might meet them and they're fighting it, they're in denial, but then as the years go on, they become accepting of this family member and their behavior, and it becomes very normal to them.
Right, and their normal isn't what everybody else's
right,
normal is.
Exactly, you know? But they're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that, specifically, a number of people who call you every now and then who've been calling you for years.
Oh, yeah.
Not every week, you know, or anything, but, you know, it could be every 6 months they just call and say hi, you know, or something, you know. And I know that for a fact that you are willing to meet with people not only in your office, but in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Or a McDonald's, for example.
In the community, yes.
In the community, yeah, okay. But I know I walked in there one time for a coffee and I saw you. So, you know, whatever. But it is great because a lot of people have a discomfort, for lack of a better word, to going into the hospital to a meeting.
Yes.
It's more comfortable for them to meet in a local place, you know, the library or whatever, or their house, rather than come to your office.
I think it feels more normal to them. And you wouldn't see somebody come, even with our support group. I think a lot of people that come the first Wednesday of every month, I think a big part of it is the social part of it.
Yeah.
Like they won't go to a restaurant by themselves, you know, but to go with a bunch of people, it's, you know. It feels normal, and sitting and having a cup of coffee and talking feels normal. They feel like they're normal, you know, and rather than coming to the hospital behind closed doors. And
regardless of what their home situation is, you know.
Right.
I mean, because some of them who come every month, you know, they're... You know, story is the same.
The same story.
Right, it's the same story, but, you know.
But they're comfortable saying it in front, talking. That's the other part of this with mental illness is the families feel very isolated.
Yep.
So they don't have too many people that they can talk to about their family member. So they're comfortable in that environment.
Well, I know for a fact, when my son first got ill, the first 6 years, I wouldn't talk about it.
Right.
Absolutely wouldn't talk about it. you know, and I've said many times, people would say, hey, Larry, how's the family? Oh, Paul's doing this, Scott's doing that, Sherry's doing that. I got four kids, you know, and I would never even mention his name.
Yeah.
And my wife would want to talk about it, and I'd go in the other room, get coffee. Or I'd go down a truck stop and get coffee or read a book or go into the bedroom, shut the door,
and
read a book.
Yeah, you couldn't deal with it.
I couldn't just – I would do anything I could to help him, but I just couldn't talk about it,
right.
either to my wife or to anybody else. Your predecessor is the one who got me to talk about it. I can't believe it's been 17 years.
So you didn't found the – did you found the program, Chris?
Did I find it?
Did you start the
program?
Oh,
no. This program, well, back then it was in existence 25 years, so it's been around for a really long time,
Yeah, and also people can call. They have a scheduled appointment. It's not like you're just there to take calls.
Oh, no, no. They have to, they have to make an appointment, absolutely.
Right. But but instead of coming in person or meeting somewhere, they can also do the entire thing over the phone.
We will make concessions, but it's really better if they're able. I mean, if you have somebody that's disabled and needs to talk, of course we're going to give them that time.
And how much time does a person have? Is it like a regular therapy session where they have close to an hour? Or what do you
recommend? Yeah, so that's where we're different.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's as much time as they need. So when you have a family that's coming in for the first time, I could be with them 2.5-3 hours.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very different than having a scheduled therapy appointment.
And how often can the people come to you?
As often as they'd like. As often as they feel they need the support.
But if they're in crisis, can they come 3 times a week?
They could if they need to. We've never had that happen.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know, a lot of times people that are in crisis, it might be once a week. Mm-hmm. We don't limit it at all.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much are the ones that kind of...
Do you find that most of the time you're talking to more than one person, or are there a couple family members there?
It varies. Okay. I mean, we've had 11 people. We had a family once with one of my coworkers, Angela. We had to have – actually, not 11. I'm sorry. There were 9 members that came in.
Wow.
And, that's pretty much the most I've had. But, I've had many occasions where I've had several family members.
How many associates do you have now?
So right now it's myself, Angela Chufo, who's a family specialist, and myself and Angela Chufo. We actually have an opening.
You do have an opening, correct?
One thing that we used to offer that I'm not sure how we're going to do this, but we did lose our respite worker. She retired. Mm-hmm. So we're not quite sure how we're going to handle that. That wasn't a program that was really utilized to its fullest just because... You know, people just didn't utilize it. And I had another coworker that just got another job, so we have another opening. So right now, Angela and I.
Mm-hmm. And basically you have one opening?
One opening right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Angela's pretty cool. I've known her for a while, too.
you have longevity there.
Oh, thank God,
So, Chris, why did you decide to become a counselor? You had started at AT&T. Mm-hmm. Were you in some kind of human services role there?
In AT&T I was mostly supervising all the time, actually. But I always liked people, and I always, even at AT&T, I would take the people that other people didn't want. And I just always found it a challenge, I guess. And then I left AT&T. I took an early retirement because I had 2 young kids and I wanted to be home with them. So it was just kind of an evolution. I was looking for a job that had part-time work. So I mean, even before the ESC, I had other jobs. I worked for the Interfaith Hospitality Network for 2 or 3 years, which is how I wound up actually getting into parent education because I worked with the families that came into Interfaith. So it just evolved.
Did you have your degree, the master's degree in psychology, while you were at AT&T?
No. I had a business degree. I eventually got my master's degree when I got out of school.
Right.
I mean, out of AT&T.
Okay.
I was working toward that.
I think people are always amazed to find out the services are free.
Mm-hmm.
So how is this funded? Is this state funded?
Yes.
And it's been more than 25 years. the state funding?
I would think, yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that, but it's been around for a very long time.
Is it by grants or is it by...
Grants, yeah.
It's by grants, yep. Right? So you have so often you have to reapply for the grant.
I don't know how they do that. I don't get involved in that.
I think they do.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, but I'm not sure if it's... I know that there's some that have to do that every year. I don't think
this
program does.
Yeah, I don't think this one
does
but
yeah.
There's some that do have to do it every year, but I don't believe this one does, but I think that it's... every couple of years or years or something like that. Something like that.
Yeah.
So, but I know it's done by a grant, so...
Right.
You know.
So this program, is it unique to Hunterdon or do other hospitals...
No, this is a state... Oh, well, to Hunterdon.
The state have these types of family support?
Yeah, no, it's a state.
Counseling.
It's a statewide program, but every county has a different agency.
Okay.
Sponsoring it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have Hunterdon Medical Center. There's some that have Easter Seals sponsoring it.
Right.
There's some that have St. Clair's. I don't know. They're 21 counties, and everyone has a different...
So it's not always connected to a hospital?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
If someone calls you for an appointment, what's the process then?
So they call. I explain to them what our program does. I explain to them that they can either meet us in the office or we have locations off-site. We can come to the home if the family member, the ill family member, is not there. We will come to the home because we want them to feel comfortable and feel that they can talk about it, the situation, openly. And so they decide, and then we make an appointment, and then we go through the whole process of what it is we do. We give them resources. We do refer to NAMI all of the time. And then they decide after the first or second visit if this is something that they want to continue. Sometimes they'll come in the first and second time, then they'll say, no, I think I'm okay. Then we'll hear from them maybe several months later when another crisis comes up. So that happens often. So just when you think you're kind of, you'll never see this family again, that doesn't always happen like that.
Yeah.
They're back, yeah.
Well, what I'm saying then, too, is, all right, I call you, okay? I've got a crisis with my son,
right?
Okay? So you tell me what's available. Well, in that case, what would be available?
Well, it depends on the crisis. I've actually made phone calls when I felt the family, for example, I had a family where the son was acting very, very strange, and I thought he could be in a very dangerous situation. The family was reluctant to do anything, and I told them that I was going to. So, and they said, okay, so I called mobile outreach. So we have mobile outreach, not us, but emergency services, where the counselor will go to the home.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, they brought him in, and the person had to be committed. And the family is very grateful that I took that step because they were in denial for such a long time about the mental health of their son. So so if it's a crisis, immediately, I would tell them immediately to call crisis, or I'll intervene and I'll call crisis, tell them what's going on, and we handle it.
Is there a... I know that... forgive me if I'm getting this crossed here.
It's okay.
You know, but Al Bassetti was talking about it one time to the mental health board, which I'm on, that they're looking to have places in the various places in the county so that if they go to somebody, they don't have to bring them to the hospital. They can bring them to, I don't know, a house or whatever, where they can sit and there's a counselor there to talk to them and maybe calm them down or whatever. Is that part of your program?
It's not part of ours. I don't know if he's talking about the integrated behavioral health where they have a counselor in different doctor's offices. Or it sounds like it goes beyond that.
Yeah, it's beyond the doctor's office. It's like because they weren't bringing them specifically to a doctor's office.
What
we're saying. It's like say they were bringing him to a house.
And Larry, are you talking about a patient now rather than a family? Let's say
I'm talking about somebody that
the patient
needs help,
right?
Yeah,
that needs help, and not necessarily they feel it's more comfortable in not all circumstances, obviously, but in certain circumstances. The patient would feel more comfortable not coming to the hospital and talking to a counselor at wherever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard of that. This is the first time I'm hearing of it, but I'm not surprised at all because we're always trying to think, you know, always trying to think of different ways that we can reach the patient.
And, yeah, it would make, and, you know, obviously there's certain circumstances where it wouldn't make sense and
right.
you would, you know, have to go to the hospital. But certain circumstances would, I would think, would be more ideal for the person to go somewhere where it's calm and it's not
low-key.
Low-key. Safe house, in a
way.
Yeah, something like, you know, for lack of a better word, but it's...
That would be
really interesting to find out.
Yeah.
Well, they were looking to get a grant for it, and I think they got it, so I'm not...
Oh, okay.
I'm not positive. Don't hold me to that.
Oh, okay. Check on that.
Yeah.
You know. Sounds great.
Mm-hmm. But... do you have, like, seminars for the families? Do you put on?
We have psychoed psychoed seminars. We try to have one once a month. We have various people come in. Sometimes the turnout is low, but we have found, actually, within this past year that we get the most success. We have people that come in. When we have a speaker that talks about wellness. So not so much focusing on bipolar or focusing on schizophrenia, but focusing on wellness. So we had somebody come in August, one of our therapists. Actually, we've been using a lot of our therapists. And she talked about, different yoga, showed different methods of de-stressing. And then in October, we had somebody come in and talk about mindfulness. So when we're talking about things to help somebody get through something, like anxiety, things that we can all relate to, not specifically one disorder, but something we can all relate to in our life, and we usually have a very good turnout then.
And they're held at the medical center generally?
Yes, once a month. But we do a press release, so
It's in the auditorium. Correct?
No, now it's in, again, we do a press release and it'll show you the location, but for this past year it's actually been in the boardroom.
Okay.
One of the conference
rooms.
Yeah,
I know
rooms.
Where it is.
Yeah.
By the
cafeteria.
Yeah.
You got it, yes.
Okay, I'm getting old, my thought went out of my head. No. Okay, go ahead. It'll come back to me.
That's okay. Do you think people are surprised to find out that this program exists?
They always act surprised, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and they'll say, you know, how come nobody ever told me about this? And, you know, truthfully, when I started at the hospital, I didn't know it existed either. You know, unfortunately, you learn about it when there is a crisis.
Well, you know, like most people, when you have a child, you know, you're envisioning doctor, lawyer, you know, architect or whatever, you're not envisioning that the person is going to be wind up in a hospital for almost 3 years with schizophrenia.
Right.
So consequently, when it happens, you don't really realize what to do. Mm-hmm. You never heard of your organization. You never heard of mine.
Right.
You know, so consequently, you know, you don't know what you have to do or don't do or so on and so forth. So, you know, it's tough finding out. I had to find out about it, and, you know, I don't know how my wife found out about it, but she did.
Yeah.
But it was a long while after, you know, the initial that she did. So it's, you know, it's sad. But
until you go through something. You don't know what's out
there.
If you don't need it, and you don't know what you don't know, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Until you have a crisis, and then when you're having a crisis, you're not realizing, well, what am I going to do? You know, I need the help too, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're thinking about, oh, it's a crisis. You know, this so-and-so is going to do this, or they're going to try to stop them from doing that, you know, and that sort of thing. And it's very difficult because we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times people say, I never heard of NAMI, you know. And,
You know, and they didn't need to know about it.
Well, they didn't need to know about it, exactly. Right. You know, it's not like, you know, you do it when you're a child or, you know, when the child is growing up, you, oh, I got to look up NAMI. You know, that doesn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with your organization. People don't realize it, you know.
Yeah.
And I know, gee, it had to be, well, I don't know when Priscilla found out about it. I think Priscilla found out about it because she took the family-to-family course before I did, because I was still working and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because I worked nights into the morning and mm-hmm. stuff. But she did it, and I think that's where she found out about it. So consequently, you know, after when I had the opportunity, I went, and it was, you know, very informative, and that's how I found out about, you know, your organization
right.
and stuff, and,
right.
you know, and then my wife drugged me to see your predecessor, who I can't think of her name right now. But
Pat Shaw.
Pat Shaw, that's it. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. But, you know, and she was very helpful to me.
Yeah, oh, yeah. She was a great boss, too.
You know, she was very helpful to me, you know, to get me through so I could open up and talk about it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And but does every county have a similar program?
Every county has an IFSS.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Jersey.
It's a statewide program.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, in other states, I would assume it'd be different. Or,
I don't know if they are available in other states because I did have somebody call from Pennsylvania once.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the other thing. They can't. They don't have to be Hunterdon County residents,
right.
but they just need to meet us in Hunterdon County.
Okay.
So, in other words, we're not going to go to Somerset or Warren or any of those.
Right, because they have their own.
They have their own. So if they want to come to, you know, if they want to stay with Hunterdon County, they have to come. But even people from other places, we've had people where we've called. I've had a couple from Pennsylvania, and then I think Angela actually had somebody she was working with that lived, I think, in Colorado or Ohio. But his family member was here.
Right, right. Well, there's a difference there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like one of the person in the family has to be here.
Yeah, they have
right.
to be here, which
right.
is why they kind of want to connect with Hunterdon County because they want to be where the services are for their family member. A lot of families, though, are under the misconception when they come that we can give them information about their family member, and we do not do that. So initially they might connect with us thinking we know more than they do about their family member because the family member is receiving services from us. And they're very surprised when they, you know, when they come in and I'll say, tell me about your son or daughter, husband or wife. And they'll say, well, don't you know, blah, blah, blah. And I say, I know nothing about them. And I don't.
Right.
Yeah. But I think a lot of times they're very frustrated with the system because they're trying to get answers. And as long as there wasn't a consent sign, nobody
yeah.
can talk.
Right. And that's...
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that.
I know. Well, everybody feels the same way, believe me.
It's just
kind of frustrating.
You know, I understand that, you know, they have to have certain regulations, but you would think when the family, you know, I can see, you know, a distant cousin or something, you know, not knowing or not being
yeah.
able to. But, you know, family and, you know.
But, honestly, we don't even receive that information. I get a referral form that has somebody's name on it, their date of birth, you know, maybe the diagnosis, and that's it. I don't have any other information on that family.
Mm.
Family gives me the information.
Right.
I know nothing else, though.
Do you think there's stages? It's interesting to me when you said some people just get around to acceptance.
Yeah.
What are some other possible stages that people might be in?
Well, I think what happens is, like, initially, like Larry spoke to, that you might be in a denial, or you might think it's almost like the five stages of grief is really what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like in this denial stage, and you're thinking that this is just a phase. That a lot of them want to believe that the pot smoking caused the illness, where studies have shown that could just bring it on earlier.
Right.
You know, and maybe if he stops smoking pot or maybe if he stops drinking, that this will go away. And sometimes it does. Sometimes it does because, you know, marijuana can bring on a psychosis. But so in that stage, it's usually the ones that are 18 or 19 years old, or the kids went to college and developed psychosis there. So the parents are still kind of in a real state of shock. And then kind of as the kids get older, like what Larry was saying, when they kind of, and it seems to be in their 30s, believe it or not, where they start accepting the fact, not, maybe not accepting it, but they're starting to open their heads up a little bit or their minds so that they're, that maybe there is something wrong here because they can't hold down a job. You know, they become very isolated themselves. They're embarrassed that they're living at home with their parents if they are. They don't feel like they're moving on, and they see all their friends moving on.
Right.
You know, so sometimes, you know, in their 20s, they're still kids. Everybody's still doing that adolescent thing. But in their 30s, they start seeing their friends get married, have babies, children, work. And it becomes, I think at that point, some of them are more willing to, you know, maybe accept uh-huh. some services. But then as the years go on, and we're talking about families, so some of my families now, and I would say that the ones that are in their 70s, my senior families, and they have kids that are in their 40s and 50s, they've gotten to the point where they just, okay, this is the way it is, you know, she's going to be 50 now, or what, you know, what more can, and they settle into this is the way it is. They kind of start not focusing so much on that person, but having their own life. I've right. noticed that, whether it's coming to meetings or whether it's meeting other people for coffee. We've had little mini groups sprung out of our support group where these people have connected with one another and mm-hmm. meet on their own.
So there's a lot of support here, basically.
They really, yeah, if they want it, sure there is. Yeah.
Right.
But unfortunately, it takes quite a while sometimes.
It's a journey.
For people to accept.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, they'll get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're not going to get over it.
No.
You know, and, you know, a lot of times the drugs and alcohol, some of them take it to relieve the stress and their pain and from
yeah.
the illness. And some of them, it's just, you know, something that they would have done anyway without, you know, mental
right.
illness.
And but technically, our program, we don't work with addictions at all. So the person, the primary diagnosis has to be a mental illness,
right.
like bipolar or depression. If it's, you know, polysubstance abuse, any type of alcoholism or, you know, I've had families come in where that issue, they I'll see them once or twice, and then we don't see them anymore because it becomes such a obvious enabling situation, and we're not talking anymore about the mental illness. We're talking like he got drunk last night. He drinks 25 beers a night, and mm-hmm. and there has never really been a diagnosis of mental illness. It's been
okay.
more of an addiction.
But you are open to what I guess what they call comorbid. If someone has, if the person,
if there was
family
a
member has mental illness
right.
and a substance abuse.
Oh
problem,
yeah, that's co-occurring. Yeah, we do
right.
that. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah.
Which happens in many cases.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's not easy to deal with either.
No, you know, going back to how we were talking about acceptance with my older family members, it's kind of funny because what they see now is how, as they get older, how the ill family member who might is very dependent on them, they've become dependent on their help. So they'll, like I do have a family that I've been working with for years, and both her sons now are living at home. But it's become more of a help to her because, you know, she's becoming a little more disabled. So she enjoys having him home. It's
so
not
they
lonely.
Things, yeah,
they can
so,
do things,
right.
and they've kind of settled into this kind of a life. So
right.
it's not so, yeah, it really is not as bad as it was back when they had these hopes that
right.
were never realized.
Right. But, you know, yeah. everybody does it differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to get our son to be independent because we're not going to be here forever.
Right.
And he'd have to know, you know, yeah, he's got two brothers and a sister, but they're not his parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have their own lives too. And yes, they help him. And yes, they call him. And yes, they stay in touch with him and so on and so forth, go out to dinner with him and everything. But the point is that they're not his parents.
Right.
And he has to, we tried to make it that he knew who to call, which doctor did what, you know, and, you know, who to, how to get a hold of them and so mm-hmm. on and so forth and have his own bank account. which is not a blessing. When we write a check every month to balance it, I can understand that. He has to pay his rent, he has to pay his electricity, and he doesn't make all that much because he's only working part time, So, but anyway, it's a lot of times, like what we do is he'll come over on Sundays and bring his laundry so he doesn't have to pay to have it done.
Yeah.
And he'll, do his laundry and he'll have dinner with us and now I'll take him to the gym once a while, once a week, which he enjoys and I enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's, and he calls, which is fine, and we talk on the phone, but, he's basically on his own.
And that really is the best case scenario.
Right. That's a success story.
Yeah, it is a success story. This is what any family, I think, would want for their family member.
Yeah, it's not that easy to get sometimes.
No, I know it's not.
Either the person with the illness doesn't want to do it that way or whatever,
Yeah.
But...
Oh, you're fortunate.
Well, he went through many years of Easter SEALs.
No, and, I know. You've taken advantage of all the support that's
right.
out there.
Right, and there's a lot of support out there.
Yeah.
And now, with this fee for service, there's going to be a little less support around, because some of these organizations...
I can't speak on that at all.
I won't, but I'm just saying there will be a lot less around because I know some of the organizations are cutting back on their services mm-hmm. because they can't do it with fee for service. So, because people don't have the money.
Yeah.
And it's just insane, to me. But mm-hmm. that's another subject.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work.
Are there any new programs that you're looking into starting or not?
Not at this time, no.
Okay.
Yeah, we're kind of short staffed, so we're kind of just keeping up with what we've got.
Right, Pretty much, just off the top of my head, how many clients would you each have?
How many families do we deal with?
Angela, how many would she approximately have? As opposed to how
we
many
have
you
about
have?
Okay. Well, I have many, many more because I've been doing it longer, so I have the same people for the most part and getting
right.
new ones.
They keep
and she works a
you,
little
right.
bit less than me. Yeah. So she, I have probably we have a total of about 45 or 50 clients.
That's
probably,
a large number.
Yeah.
You mean each?
No, total.
Okay. Total.
About 45.
Yeah.
She probably has. I probably. 12
to
15,
I was just curious, because it's how much you can handle, without being overwhelmed
it's very manageable because a lot of people because we do cover a lot of hours. So Angela works at night,
right?
So she has we can accommodate all those people that work and want the nighttime hours. I could accommodate the daytime ones. And then when we get another person, right now it's manageable.
Right.
And maybe because it's just a little bit slower. There are times that it gets a little bit. But we manage. We've always managed.
I know that the question I was going to ask earlier just came back to me.
Yeah, you
are. Yay. It only took 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The holidays.
Yes.
Do you find that it is a rough time for people around the holidays, both for the individual with the illness and the family?
I think it's very tough. It's not that we get an increase of people calling us, though.
No.
But, I think the holidays are rough no matter, and again, it depends on the support that the families have. If you have a family that has a lot of family members, it's not so bad. But when you have a family where there might just be one or two of them, it gets difficult. I think it's lonely. think it becomes very lonely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, too, the family member, depending on the family, doesn't want... It's hard for that the ill family member, because if it's when families come together, they're very embarrassed about the fact that they're not... They don't want questions asked, so many times they'll try to make themselves unavailable.
Well, I know for a fact that many times my son would go in his room and just shut the door.
Right.
You know, and...
It could be just too much.
Right. He just didn't want any part of it.
Right.
You know.
He was just overwhelmed by the number of people. Did he
I don't know whether,
not connect with
well,
them?
Well, you know, he's got two brothers and a sister and, you know, cousins and what have you. Yeah. But it was like, I don't know whether he felt uncomfortable. They're joking around, you know, kidding with each other and busting on each other and... You know, and he would just get up and go in his room.
Right.
You know,
right.
Sometimes he wouldn't even come out for dinner.
Right.
You
know? That's very typical.
We'd bring a plate to his room and let him eat in his room, you know.
That's a typical scenario, though,
yeah.
I have to tell you.
Now, you know, it's exactly. Totally different. You know?
Well, he's got a job. He feels good about himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he should, you
yeah.
know.
I think that's probably part of it. He's proud of himself.
And he's got his own apartment and you know, everything, so which he's
happy. That's it. I think they just become very self-conscious. They think they're going to be judged. They don't feel like they're part of anything. It's very
Sometimes they don't feel like they're part of the family.
Yeah, exactly.
And they feel different.
Yeah.
And even if they are feel part of the family, they don't feel like they're part of the family,
right.
You know.
Right.
So
right.
And that's unfortunate. People wanted to find out more about you and the program, mm-hmm. or not so much you, but the program.
Yeah.
I can tell them about you. No. But how would they do that? Is there a website or a phone number?
So they can probably, the Hunterdon Medical Center, there should be a website that lists all the behavioral health agencies or programs, I should say. And then they can call. I could give you a phone number.
Sure.
It's 908-788-6401, extension 3006 or 3029.
Why don't you give that phone number again, just in case?
908-788-6401, extension 3006 or 3029.
Okay.
So we just have a few minutes left. Chris, what else can you add that you think is important that we didn't cover yet? Anything come to mind?
I think that the best thing a family could do, and I think we pretty much did cover it, is that if they're going through something like this, to reach out to NAMI or reach out to our program so right. they do not feel so isolated. Knowledge is power. We can talk to them about what they're going through. We can give them so many different resources to that can help them, as Larry said, with his son, as far as Easter Seals and just other resources that are out there. And that they're not alone. They're really not alone.
Right.
And mental illness, I see it. I think the stigma is starting to lift, especially when you see so many celebrities and sports figures come out and talk about it, more of them, and just talking about what they're going through so that they can, there's always somebody there that would understand.
You know, and like Demi Lovato, she'd think that it was quite normal to stay up for 3 days and write songs. You know, she'd stand all night up writing songs. And, you know, she'd write 6 or 7 a night and think
and
that was normal.
That was normal. Or Beckham, you know.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, these are different people that, so from so many different professions.
And Demi Lovato is now very involved with NAMI.
Yeah. Oh, is she with NAMI? That's great.
She, on a national level, on a national level, because she spoke at the last national convention.
Great.
You know.
Yeah.
And, if more people like that come out.
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody that has a mental illness is going to be a celebrity or, mm-hmm. you know, movie star or an actress mm-hmm. or singer or whatever. But it's just that these are people who have mental illness and have gone on with their lives.
Right.
You know, we give a presentation every month, and when we do, the girl I do it with, the girl, lady I do it with, we flash names up on a board of how many, all these people, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, you could fill this whole building with.
Very surprising.
I always pick out two names. One of them is Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, okay.
Here's an astronaut, walked on a moon, suffers from depression, and I mean severe depression. The whole time he was going through training, he was taking pills. Yeah. He was taking, you know, antipsychotic pills. Winston Churchill.
Yep.
He carried England on his back for 7 years.
Yeah.
He suffered from major depression.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson, if you ever go to Philadelphia and do the walk, Philadelphia walk, you should if you haven't, you should.
Yeah.
They'll tell you that Thomas Jefferson, when he was writing the Declaration of Independence, used to get a hold of Ben Franklin and give it to him at night on an empty street corner, and Franklin used to take it into the Continental Congress because Jefferson wouldn't walk in there. It was too many people.
Oh, so he had a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, he had a lot
of agoraphobia type thing,
you know.
Yeah.
Yet he talked to somebody from a balcony of 5,000 people, but he wouldn't walk into a building with five or six,
yeah,
you know. So, but it's just... it's just amazing, you know, that we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for doing your work that you do.
Yes, thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome anytime.
Just call me.
Real quickly, why don't you give the phone number again, and we'll be out of time.
Yeah, 908-788-6401, extension 3006 or 3029.
Thank you, Chris. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
17 years, huh?
Yeah. No, it might be more.
Maybe for you, not for me. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters. I hope you all have a very healthy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you again next week, same time, same station.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business. One. business at a time.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month.